I am speaking with Don Cooney, who is a professor of social work here at Western Michigan University. He is also a Kalamazoo City Commissioner and was heavily involved in the effort here in Kalamazoo to raise awareness about apartheid in the 70s and 80s, and also to award an honorary degree at Western Michigan University to Nelson Mandela. Don Cooney, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, Gordon, for doing this.
When did you first get involved in the whole anti-apartheid movement?
You know, I came out here in 1977, in the end of the summer, and I taught here for a year. And I had been very involved in social justice movements in New York and Philadelphia before I came out, but I hadn't really been involved much in South Africa. But in the summer of 78, Bill Pruitt, I think his name was, from Kalamazoo College, he was head of the Africa Studies Department there, had a series of speakers and films on South Africa. And it really deepened my awareness. And I noticed that there were some people from Western that were going to these discussions. So I hooked up with them, Don Van Hoven, Reverend Don Van Hoven, Leander Jones, who taught in the African Studies Department here at Black Americana Studies, and Alan Jacobs from anthropology, who has since died. And there were a couple students, a guy named Tom Newhoff, who was a student in the School of Social Work. And we began to meet and say, okay, what can we do about this? And we made some connections, and we ended up connecting with the African National Congress representatives in this country. And we began to say to them, you know, how can we help? What can we do? And they said, we want to isolate South Africa. We want to stop any American corporation from operating there. We want to stop any banks from loaning monies to South Africa. And there were huge loans, billions of dollars coming from American banks. And the way we want to do that is we want to get every public body to divest from companies that are involved there. So that's what they asked us to do. And so we began organizing on campus and recruiting students and trying to build a movement here. We brought in speakers, we showed films, and eventually we did some research, and we went to the university and told them, we're going to ask you to divest from South Africa. And they don't want to hear that. So that began a three-year struggle.
Was Western heavily invested in companies involved in South Africa at the time?
No, they weren't heavily invested. Western puts their money into these funds, which they shift around, so it's hard to follow them. And what we said, okay, let's just put a filter there. None of that money can go into South Africa. But they were reluctant. And one of the reasons they were reluctant was because local companies were involved in South Africa. And they weren't too sure about terrorist groups or whatever. Was South Africa, were the ANC a terrorist group? Who were they? So the struggle went on for about 2 years. And then President Bernhard at the time appointed a committee to study whether the university should divest. And we insisted that they put some members of our group on the committee. So he did. He had the chief attorney for the university on it. He had the person who was in charge of development for the university on it. So that we started meeting, but they were meeting like once every 2 months. So we went to the media and said, we're not even meeting. Nothing's happening here. So then they started meeting, but then we said, we don't have equal representation here. So then they gave us equal representation. So after a year study, to the surprise of the university, the recommendation came out to divest. And they brought that to President Bernhard in a April meeting. And he said, well, I have to study this. We said, okay. So it came back. They had a meeting, I guess, in July. And he said, I'm still studying it. And then right before school started, I guess it was the beginning of September, the Board of Trustees met again, and we said, okay, so what's going on? And they said, well, we're not going to divest. So then we started really getting and disrupting that meeting. And we had the support of one trustee member a dentist from Grand Rapids. I can't remember his name right now. So they couldn't hold their meeting because we were disrupting it. And then finally he turned to us and said, look, let's let them have the meeting today, and it'll be on the agenda for October. So we said, well, we'll be on the agenda for October? And they said, yes, trust us. So we said, okay.
You trusted them.
It was a tough decision. So came time for the October meeting, and Wednesday they put out the agenda, and we weren't on the agenda. So now we knew this was it. This was the crucial time. So we began to mobilize, and we knew that we would not let them have that meeting unless they talked about South Africa. By this time, we had built quite a movement. We had the NAACP involved. We had unions involved. We had fraternities and sororities from campus involved. We had quite a movement. We would show up for the Board of Trustees meeting with 100 people, a room that holds 35. So the day of the meeting, we knew that we would have to disrupt that meeting and some of us would have to be arrested. So they tried to start the meeting and we began to chant, talk about South Africa, talk about South Africa. And we wouldn't let them start the meeting. When we came to the meeting, there were 13 armed policemen there. Armed. So we had over 100 people there at the meeting. And finally, they stopped the meeting. They tried to get an injunction from a judge to make a stop. And the judge would not give them the injunction. So they called a recess to the meeting. So during the recess, we went into one room and they went into their room. And we decided that when they came back, we would take an action. So I went and saw the head of the police department here, and I said, okay, we're going to take an action. You're going to have to arrest some of us. He said, don't touch anybody. If you touch anybody, it's assault. So we said, okay. So we went back to our group, and we said, okay, look, guys, here's what we're going to do. The table's in the middle of the room. Once they go in the room, we're going to block the doors, and we're going to start chanting, talk about South Africa, and we won't let them hold the meeting, and we won't let anybody leave. We knew that wouldn't go on very long. But we told them, everybody should not get arrested, and
don't touch anyone.
Don't touch anybody.
So you don't get charged with assault.
So when they came back in the room, they went and sat at a table in the middle, and our people moved up and sat on the floor between the table and the door. I went to one of the doors at the left end of the building, and then there were some people at the other door. There were only two doors. I was standing next to a guy, 6'3", African-American student named Greg Potts. And I started worrying, geez, I don't want him to get in trouble. So I said, Greg, you don't have to do this. He said, nobody gets out this door. I said, I'm in the right spot, man. So they tried to start the meeting. We chanted, and then they immediately stopped the meeting. Now they have to get from there to the door. So they just walked on top of our people over to the door. The first one to the door was President Bernhardt. And I stood there with my arms folded. I said, I'm sorry, President Bernhardt, you cannot come out that door. Immediately, a policeman grabbed me around the neck. Another policeman grabbed me around the stomach. They carried me out in the hall, they handcuffed me. And they arrested 9 students, myself and Don Van Hoven, the campus minister. So they took us to court, and they took us to jail. The city had a jail then. And I had asked beforehand what the bail would be, and they had told the lawyers we were talking to said about, it'll be about $100 a person, but they'll give you like, you only have to pay 10% of it. So I had $200 in my pocket. So finally we were in a cell and I said, okay, so what's the bail? They said $100. I said, okay, so 10%, right? They said, no, not for you guys. It's $100
each. Full freight.
So we got $1,100 and we had $200 in fine. So we just decided we're going to stay there. Within 2 hours, students took up a collection and bailed us out. And so then they took us to trial. It took like 5 months to take us to trial. And the trial lasted 5 days. And we got letters from South Africa. And I could tell you long stories about the trial. But basically, we turned it into a trial about apartheid. And to our surprise, at the end of it, the jury found us not guilty. Every day I would bring my toothbrush thinking I'm going to jail today. But within 2 months, the university divested. And that was in, I believe, 1981. And so we continued the struggle until Mandela was elected president for the next 13 years. Yeah.
And that included getting Nelson Mandela an honorary degree from Western Michigan University,
right?
Not after he was released from prison, but while he was still in there. And I've been told Western was well ahead of the curve in terms of American schools. He's, of course, received many honorary degrees, yeah, over his lifetime, but Western was at least among the first five.
I don't know about how we ranked in that. We were among the first six for divestment. Where we were in giving him an honorary degree, I'm not sure. We were early, and a lot of people didn't want to give him an honorary degree because he was in prison. At that time, President Reagan was branding their organization as a terrorist organization. There were 300 American corporations in South Africa. But to President Heneke's credit, after quite a long struggle, he decided that he was going to fight to give him an honorary degree.
Why did you think it was important to give him an honorary degree, even though he obviously could not be there to receive it? He couldn't, yeah, speak to the students. He was still in prison. Why was it important to do it then?
We thought that it was everything that we could do to put the issue on the public agenda needed to be done. And we thought that here was a guy who was a symbol of this struggle, and that the university, for all that they say they stand for, should be standing behind this struggle, should be standing with Nelson Mandela. He was the symbol of the whole struggle. And that's what happened.
You had a chance to meet Nelson Mandela, right?
I did. When he was released from prison in 1990, he made a tour of 9 cities. And the first one he went to was New York. And he was going to speak at Yankee Stadium. The African National Congress worked in this country through an organization in New York called the American Committee on Africa. And the American Committee on Africa decided that when Mandela came to New York, they would invite anti-apartheid leaders from the country to meet with him. So I went as a representative of our organization on campus, SASO, South African Solidarity Organization, and there were about 60 of us. It was one of the great experiences of my life. I mean, here was the guy. He was the symbol of our struggle for the last 12 years. And here he was with us on his just released from prison. And it was really quite an experience.
Now, you say symbol of the struggle. I mean, how symbolic was it to have him released from prison? And how tangible was it in terms of actually moving the issue of divesting and apartheid forward?
When Nelson Mandela was released from prison, that was the first step toward the end of apartheid. Everybody knew that, including Nelson Mandela. They had been negotiating with him for years. They had offered him release, but only under certain conditions. And he would not accept release except unconditionally. And when he was released from prison, he had negotiated the terms of his release. And one of the terms was that there would be an election in 4 years. And everybody knew that when there was an election, Nelson Mandela was going to be elected president. So this was really the beginning of the end. This was the beginning of the victory. And it was a wonderful thing. And the thing that struck me so much struck me that day, but I remember it very vividly, his humility, his kindness, his openness. He met with us for about an hour and discussed strategy. What were next steps and what should we do and where were we going? And it was just a wonderful thing to be in his presence.
So you had a role here as activist, but you also had the role of professor of a student who then went on to,
yeah,
play a role in South Africa.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We had a student here named Leila Patel, who was a so-called colored from South Africa. And she had been an anti-apartheid activist.
Explain what you mean when you say colored.
When you were born in South Africa under apartheid, on your birth certificate, the day you were born, you were listed as European, which meant white, and they were 14% of the population. African, which meant black. Colored, which was a small, very much smaller group of people there, or Asian, which was an even smaller group. So she that determined where you could live, where you could work, what school you could go to, and who you could marry. And she was listed as a so-called colored. She was extremely bright lady, and I got to be very good friends with her and her husband when she was here. And when they were going to go back, I asked her if she was going to go back into the struggle, and she said, absolutely. I asked her if she was going to join the violent end of the struggle. She said she would never do that, but she would never criticize those who did. So I told her and her husband to contact me if anything happened to her. So she wasn't back 2 months, and then her husband called me one day and said, last night they came in the middle of the night, knocked down a door, took her away, and I don't know where she is. So I called Amnesty International in London, and in 24 hours, they told me what prison she was in, what she was charged with, how to contact the prison and the Minister of Justice, and that she had not yet been tortured. So we swung into action here, and within a week, we generated 100 letters from the president of the university, from key people in town, and Howard Wolpe was the chair of the African subcommittee at that time. And he sent those letters down to the Minister of Justice by diplomatic pouch. And she was, within a week, released from prison. And I got a letter from her thanking us for that, but saying, you know, it wasn't so much that I got out of prison, but it was a symbolism of the struggle, you guys' solidarity with us. And after Mandela was released from prison and became president, they had to revamp the whole social welfare system in South Africa. And he put her, Leila Patel, in charge of revamping the whole social welfare system in South Africa. And so that a Western Michigan University graduate restructured the whole social welfare system in South Africa. I was in South Africa 4.5 years ago, and I connected with her and a couple of my other students that I had from South Africa. And I went to a talk by her, and it was completely jammed with people everywhere. And she saw me standing in the back and told me, come down and sit in the front and introduce me to the people. But what struck me was how popular she was in South Africa and still is.
You mentioned the name Howard Wolpe, a former congressman from this area, one time on the Kalamazoo City Commission, and of course was widely regarded as an expert in African relations, African government. How much did his influence play a part in Kalamazoo, as you say, being ahead of the curve on the whole issue of apartheid?
Howard Wolpe was a tremendous force in mobilizing Congress to take action against apartheid. And when Mandela was released from prison, he came and visited Wolpe specifically because he was great. But it was interesting because Wolpe was playing an inside game and we were playing an outside game. And actually, Wolpe didn't want to be too much associated with us. He respected us from a distance, but he felt that if he was too associated with the people who were acting in a very confrontative and radical way, that might hurt his inside job. This is my analysis of it. So we kept very much in touch, but we were on different paths. But Wolpe, you know, it was very interesting because Congress passed a bill which would have prohibited any new American corporations going into South Africa and encouraging other corporations to withdraw. And President Reagan vetoed it. But Congress was able to override that veto. And it's the only time in the 20th century, I believe, that a foreign policy decision by the president had been overthrown. But there's a story behind that, too. I worked for 25 years with the American Friends Service Committee on their Africa subcommittee. And the head of the Africa committee was a guy named Jerry Herman out of Philadelphia. And he helped organize an anti-apartheid organization in every congressional district in the country. So that when there was this veto, there were people in every congressional district to speak up and fight against that.
So maybe moving on just a little bit from the issue of apartheid, but the whole issue of social justice activism, trying to get things done. As you look back on this, are there some lessons that you take away from how all of that worked that tell you, you know, if you really want to get things done, here is the blueprint?
Right. There's a couple things about that. One thing, the apartheid movement was so clear. It was so clear. I mean, the racism was so clear. The injustice was so clear. It was easy to show people the injustice and move people around on that. Today, it's much more difficult. President Obama gave a speech last week in which he talked about inequality and the lack of mobility of people who are poor to move up. To identify the causes of that is more subtle and really has to be, and it's more difficult to organize around that. But what we learned from our struggle were many things, but a couple of them. One was the importance of solidarity. It was the international solidarity. I mean, the people from South Africa were mounting their struggle within the country, and we were joining with people in America and in Europe to be the outside force. And it was our people working together who were able to do that. I mean, the South African people are primarily responsible for their liberation, not us. I remember once we brought a speaker here from South Africa, and I was single at the time. And he was a labor leader, and I was very impressed with him. And I said to him afterwards, I said, look, I want to come down with you. I want to work down there with you guys. Put his hand on my shoulder. He said, my brother, we'll liberate ourselves. But you're here in the belly of the beast. And we need you to remove the obstacles so that we can win our struggle. So the international solidarity was one thing. The second thing was perseverance. I mean, it was a long struggle and much longer for them than for us. But we even worked at it at 13 years. We were involved in it. So it's a long struggle and you can't expect quick results. And the third struggle, third piece is you got to be willing to take a stand and face the consequences. When I got arrested, I had not even finished my dissertation, and I didn't have tenure. So I presumed I was going to get fired. To my amazement, they didn't fire me and gave me tenure. But you know, we were willing to face those things and we were willing to take it because it was important for the struggle. So you got to be willing to put yourself on the line for the struggle. You got to be willing to stand with the people.
Why do you think you didn't get fired and were able to get tenure?
The only thing that I can think of, well, I think there's a couple things. I think the people in this that were teaching in the School of Social Work thought I was doing a good job with students and with the teaching over there. But I think the second thing is they did not want to make me a martyr because if they made me a martyr, that would have been an international issue and we would have had all kinds of people here screaming and shouting.
Don Cooney, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. Thanks a lot.
Don Cooney is a professor of social work at Western Michigan University and also a Kalamazoo City Commissioner.